Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 90 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Todd, joined with Leonard, as always. How you doing today, Leonard?
I'm doing pretty good. Episode 90.
I know we're closing in on the double 100, zero for 100 there. Can't wait.
You know, somebody on another podcast I was listening to was talking about how people like celebrate these milestones. It's like, oh, you've just been doing the podcast for a long time. That doesn't mean anything. And they jokingly said they were going to do a hipster-style thing where they were just going to arbitrarily choose a date of like, well, this was, episode 43. That's going to be the anniversary one that we celebrate.
Yeah. I always liked when they had the anniversary for the Jerk DVD with Steve Martin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember if it was the 24th or the 26th year, the anniversary of the Jerk. And
Right. Actually
they waited, and I thought that was hysterical. So, yeah, I could see doing that. But I think we'll celebrate it on the 100, right?
Yeah, we're going to do I'm sure we'll do something. We're going to have something special for next week's episode as well, if all things line up. I'm sure we'll talk. I think we'll talk more about that on Twitter, just in case things fall through.
Gotcha. How was your weekend? I saw you had a big fun weekend.
I was busy. It was a busy weekend, taking the baby to Knoebels. We had a good time. He enjoyed it for the most part. He was afraid to get on most of the rides. The ball pit and the moon bounce were his favorite.
I heard he was just destroying people in the
No, he wasn't destroying people. He was getting leveled.
I thought he was no selling, though.
Well, he wasn't, you know, people were like landing on him and just like kneeing him in the side of the head, and he was just like, no, I'm not going to sell that.
Yeah. Well, that sounded fun. Was parking still free at Knoebels?
Yes, actually, this is the thing. I have very rarely been to Knoebels. I think this was the fourth time that I've ever been to Knoebels.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, like I said, it's just something I've never been to, but April would go all the time as a child. All the time. And, so we're hoping this is going to be like a regular thing for the baby that we get a chance to take him.
That's cool.
Yes.
I remember Knoebels. Knoebels was fun. But my weekend consisted of sitting around and going to see Wolverine.
Oh, do you want to talk about that at the end of the episode? Do you want to talk about that now?
I think we could save it till the end of the show, and then we could, you know, maybe I could talk about it a little bit more if people don't want to have it ruined for them.
Mm-hmm.
But,
Sounds good.
Yep, along with that, we have TV news, especially about Leonard's favorite TV show. There was a big announcement over the weekend. And we have 3D covers. You're going to get some, or aren't you?
Oh, boy. And this is actually, we had actually talked about this, I think, a little bit, but we'll get more into what our discussion was at the time when we get to that story.
Yep. We're going to talk about what we read last week. I think we're going to talk about Red Lanterns and a couple other books. I don't think we had a lot crossing over, though.
No, we actually did.
Did we?
You know, we had Red Lanterns, of course.
Mm-hmm.
We had Indestructible Hulk.
Yes, that's right.
But, you know, 2 out of 4 ain't bad.
2 out of 4. I think that should be a song from Meatloaf.
Oh, boy.
But
it'll be on Bat Out of Hell 3.
I think there was a Bat Out of Hell 3, wasn't there?
I know there was a 2.
There should have been a 3, if not 3 or 4, either way. And then we'll talk about what we're looking forward to this week. I wonder if we'll cross over. I highly doubt it, though.
You know what? There's a chance.
You never know.
Yeah.
And then we have our Twitter question, which was, what's the most underrated run of a comic, in your opinion? We had some interesting ones on this one.
You know, and it's difficult. A lot of times I was, reading some people's choices and I'm like, I don't know. That one's still underrated. And this is one that was tough for me. I think I've changed my mind about 5 times on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, we'll discuss all that too later.
Yes. Get crazy with all that. But, where would you like to start?
Okay, well, let's talk about the DC covers first.
The kerfuffle.
We had talked before about the upcoming Villains Month, and they have all the crazy lenticular covers, the fancy 3D covers, if you will. And we had talked, please correct me if I'm wrong, that at the time we had said that maybe they should give us the option to have a non-3D cover. Because, you know, if you were ending up getting a lot of books because, like, Green Lantern's shipping four times, all of the Bat books are, you know, sending four times, it's a crazy huge month. And if you're getting Batman and now you have to get four Batman books, you're just getting Batman, not Detective Comics, not The Dark Knight, not Batman and Robin, but let's just say you're just getting Batman. That's three extra $3.99 books that you have to get for that month.
Right.
And, you know, if you wanted to get all those, then, you know, I felt that, you know, I think we talked about maybe they should have offered a non-3D cover just to give you the option of having to save the extra buck to put toward buying all those extra copies. But it turns out earlier this week that may not be an option. It may be our only choice.
That's right. You may not be able to get the $3.99 3D version because they're going to allocate them heavily because they were ordered, you know, they didn't print enough to order. And it's a weird situation where they printed the books before they even asked about what people were thinking about ordering.
Because the cutoff dates were like Tuesday, right?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure on that. But you know what? I think the cutoff dates go per week, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I'm trying to say? So, like,
it's this week, actually. This week is the final order cutoff week.
Right. So this week is final order cutoffs. And if what people don't know what final order cutoffs are, you know, you've ordered them, you know, a month ago and you get put your initial orders in. And then you're like, oh, well, the people are talking about it this way or that way. I can up my numbers or lower my numbers because back, you know, years ago, you used to be only order it two months before it was coming out. And then you were done. You were stuck at that number, even if people were like coming in the store saying, I'm not interested. So they implemented this. Then they did that, but with the 3D covers, they decided because of the printing thing or whatever, how they had to do it, they had to have the printing done before they even did the final order cutoffs. So I don't know why they just didn't push the final order cutoffs earlier, which they've done before in emergency cases, according to our retailer.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's crazy.
And the other thing is, you know, obviously, you know, our retailer got the email from DC the other day, and a lot of these books, they should have known to make a ton of these books because they were going to sell in any event. And I think it's going to end up leaving a real bad taste in a lot of people's mouth, you know, on the retailer level and on, you know, the individual level, and it's going to stink for a lot of people. I will be happy either way with no matter what I get. The lenticular 3D covers are cool, but if I can save an extra buck, and I'm saving a ton of money anyway because so many of the books that I normally get from DC are not shipping in September, so I have a lot of free time to pick up other stuff.
Right, right. I'm the same way, but I remember them saying that they were going to do any overprintages, like second prints, wouldn't be a 3D cover back when they announced this. But I didn't know it was going to be this bad. And the numbers, like, came in that it's 50 to 100% on certain, like, depending on your orders on certain books. So somebody might not get any 3D covers. And I have the email here, and it actually makes me, like, laugh. Like, some of the stuff where they're talking about how great it is, like, these 3D covers sold out. Because Didio and them are touting, like, we sold out, but they're not, you know, talking about how crazy it is that people won't have their numbers. And it's, like, it's very interesting to see how much interest there is in these 3D covers, which are the latest in a long line of innovations from DC Entertainment, like the fold-out poster in Superman Unchained 1, or the die-cut covers from Death of the Family. I'm like, innovative covers like Death of the Family? Like, die-cut goes back to the 90s. Like, that's, like, how innovative is a die-cut cover from DC Entertainment?
Well, they did it as a half-Joker face. That's how.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just really weird. And then they're talking about but they're like, oh, we're going to give retailers as much time as possible to focus on ordering standard editions and the 3D motion complete sets because later on down the line, we're going to put all these out in a complete set and you can buy them all and save $11 by buying them all this way. I think it's $11 or $12 that they said they can save. I'm not 100% sure on that. But it just makes me laugh because I don't know if you remember. Do you remember when they were saying, like, oh, like, even at $3.99, we're taking a hit on these books.
Yep.
We're not going to be making a lot of money. I was laughing and joking. We were talking with Dave. Maybe they just saw how crazy these got, and they're like, we're going to lose money if we keep printing them to like order, because the 3D wacky cover. This is just, as far as I'm concerned, that like is going to leave a bad taste everywhere.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see which retailers get allocated which books. Like, I can only speak for our store, of course. And I can only imagine that it's a lower selling book that's getting these lenticular covers that may not have been ordered as much. Like, let me think. I'm trying to think of what's a good book that's on the list. And okay, so it's terrible to use this as the example, but I have no choice but not to use it as the example. And that's going to be Swamp Thing, right?
Right.
Swamp Thing is not a huge selling book. It does okay. It's not a huge selling book. So I don't think that DC was going to print over. And let's say they sell 30,000 copies of that a month, okay? And I'm just pulling that number out of thin air. I'm sure they probably printed 30,000 of that book. They did not print one extra. But because it has the crazy cover, orders might have been up by 20%. So that means, you know, maybe they're not going to fill 20% of that one.
See, I agree with all that. I think they might have printed a little bit, but not a lot. I honestly think with something like this, they would have went, it sells 30,000 because it's a gimmick thing that we're doing. We're going to maybe print 32,500, 33.
But,
you know what I mean? Something
but see,
like that.
My thought process is, I'm sure they looked at it. Like, I'm sure every Batman book got overprinted.
Right. Oh, I'm totally with you.
But were they overprinted enough is the question.
Those are, I think, the ones that might be closer, but you never, like, closer to fill the orders. But they may be the only 50% allocated. Mm-hmm. You know, the 100% allocated. And I can't imagine being a store, you know, and getting none of the 3D covers.
Yeah.
And you just know that, because I know for a fact somebody at the shop got all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I put in his order, not like yesterday, like when, you know, Dave was smart enough to put out the call, because there's no way to possibly order these knowingly with the way it was set. Like, right even there, it starts out with the way to order them, because they're, you know, villains, and then the different creative teams, you're already a mess. So he has to figure out what people will want. He has to kind of read minds. He throws it out there. Somebody goes, you know what, 2 months in advance, I want them all. And he can't give them all because it's crazy.
Because I know me, I know the final order cutoff is this week, but I know the actual cutoff for the actual order due date was, I think, 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think so.
So it was 3 weeks ago, and that day, you know, when Dave, I saw, was putting his information up online that he was going to do his order that day, I sent him an email. I said, listen, I know it's a mess that month. Here are the books that I want that month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm like, a lot of them aren't ones I normally get because, like, Batgirl is, you know, Batman the Dark Knight 23.2 this month.
Right.
Just because the way everything ends up shaking out. And, like, I don't usually get all those Superman books, but they're all being written by Greg Pak or, you know, creative teams that I like. The Green Lantern things are something that all crosses over. So get those. But even with the extras, I'm still way under my DC books for that month. So I sent that to our retailer 3 weeks ago so he could properly fix his order. And when I give him my list for September at the end of August, there's going to be an extra post-it note and saying, like, here's what's supposed to be out week one. Here's what's supposed to be out week two. And this is what hopefully is in my bag. And, you know, it'll be nice to get the fancy covers, but I'll be okay if I don't get the fancy covers.
Well, that's the thing. I think you'll definitely, because there looks like the 2D covers or the regular covers or non-fancy covers, whatever we want to dub them, are going to be, you know, fine and easy to get because they're already talking about, like, the giving them plenty of time for the final order cutoffs on those. But you know what? And this is just going to make it is going to make it crazy, though, because now that people know that they can't get some of them, it's going to be even worse. And I've already predicted the guy coming in with the two-armful scoop, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
and just going, oh, I'm taking these. And it's like, you know, like two per customer, like, you know, depending, blah, blah, blah. He's like, oh, but I got my brother wants one, my cousin, there's, you know, extended family needs them, you know, and just I might try to sit there and just tweet the line of excuses for people wanting like 20 covers or 20 copies of a certain book.
Well, I'm
there's going to be one hot one. You know what I mean?
I'm replacing all the Baltazar Franco things up on the baby's wall with all the lenticular covers. So I'm going to need 20 of each.
Gotcha. I'm tweeting that right now.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, so it's going to be, it's just on top of that. Like, we're talking about the whole kerfuffle for DC or for the retailers, and then after that the speculator market is going to make it even worse.
To me the funniest thing about all this is just this past week at Boston Comic Con, DiDio and Jim Lee gave this whole big dissertation, and they said that they see no real movement with variant covers.
Yeah, okay. You know what? If you want to buy a bridge, I got a bridge for you. If you need some oceanfront property in the middle of, you know, North Dakota, because that's just crazy talk.
Are you insinuating that they're liars?
No, I think, you know what, occasionally people get their facts wrong or they misread something, and that's where I think I would never call them liars.
Mm-hmm. So just moving on in the news, we spent a lot of time on that, but I think it's going to be a big deal in the coming weeks here.
I totally agree.
A follow-up to a story that we'd mentioned on the show several weeks ago was when Chew was being optioned, the John Layman book from Image, to be a TV show on Showtime for quite some time, and he had lamented that he had still not gotten paid for it. But he said that there is still an option that it may still end up being a live-action show, but it does look, they are looking into the option of an animated show, and I think that would probably be a better bet. Animation is hot, and I think a lot of the stuff that happens in Chew would lend itself better to animation than live-action. I'd love to see a live-action version of Chew, but I think their money is in animation.
You know what? I was thinking the same thing. I tried Chew and it wasn't for me, but you know, I wish him the best of luck. But looking at it and it's the feel of it, and I get it. I get what he's going for and everything. I think it's one of those that unless you did something really weird with a live action, you know, with the way it looks and stuff like that, I think animation fits this perfect because it has a look that fits the story and it's something that I don't think is easily duplicated in live action. So I would lean towards an animation, but, you know, if you're going to get a live action, just put them for the money in your pocket, do it. I look at it that way.
So, also I want to mention that this weekend, I think we'd mentioned before that this weekend is Wizard World Chicago, and it's an actually bigger stacked lineup than usual for Wizard World. You know, your usual people are there. But they also have, like, Zachary Quinto is going to be there. Michael Rosenbaum's going to be there. Michael Shannon's going to be there. Robert Rodriguez is going to be there. You know, tons of really cool people like that. Then you have, like, actually, you know, and it's terrible to say, but actual good comics guests. Like, Neil Adams is going to be there. Chris Claremont's going to be there. Snyder and Capullo are going to be doing a panel about Batman there.
That's interesting because I know, like, as you've gone to them too, is like the Philly Wizard Con has gotten less and less.
Yeah.
And on a bigger note, with comic creators, I mean, across the board. And I think it's cool because, you know, I have my angst against Wizard from the magazine days and stuff like that. But a con is a con, and I think a good con is great for the industry and stuff like that. So the more comic guests they have, hooray, because I was getting really played out on the Wizard cons, like, you know, wrestlers and movie stars and TV stars, which I think is great. That was their niche there for a while, and people were going. But it's not for me, and I think a better mix, especially at the Philly con, where when you walked in, it just looked dead because of how spaced out they had things. Get more comic people in there, have panels. I think it can only help. I don't think it can hurt in any way.
And the other thing is, you know, usually they have the WWE guests as well, and usually it's like one or two, but there's a ton of them there. Most notably to me is The Shield. And Todd does not know who the Shield is. Maybe some of our listeners know who the Shield is. But two of these three guys, just like 2 years ago, were regular jamokes on the indies. And by jamokes, I mean that in the nicest sense of the world, word outside of you have to stand in a line at a comic book convention to meet them as part of the WWE's marketing thing.
No, that's great. You know, that's a, you know.
It's crazy. I was talking to a friend of mine. It's surreal to me.
Little guy makes good, you know?
Yeah, the little guy make huge, you know? Like, these guys, it's a huge deal that they're one of the featured attractions at Wizard World this year. It's crazy.
And watch this, I'll shock you. Aren't those the guys in the cop uniforms that come through the crowd?
Yeah!
There you go. Look at that. I got one right.
So, yeah, so if you were, you know, in Chicago and, you know, I want to hear stories of Dean Ambrose's line being longer than John Cena or CM Punk's line. I know it's CM Punk's hometown, blah, blah, blah. But the Dean Ambrose line needs to be like twice as long. It needs to rival like the Stan Lee line.
Stan Lee's not going to be there.
No, he's still on the front page of the website.
Oh, no, you know what? Baltimore Con, I'm sorry, he backed out of.
Ah, there you go.
Like, and who knows, you may hear Chicago. When's Chicago? This weekend?
This weekend.
This weekend, that's why we're talking about it, Todd. no, I'm just getting confused because my con appearances. But I know because we got emails because we bought tickets that if you bought the Stanley VIP pass that refunds will be coming shortly. So that's why I was like, wait a minute. No, I thought he was canceling a show, but it's Boston.
There you go.
Or Boston, Baltimore. Boston was this past weekend.
Yes, it was. So that's all there is in the news.
Wait a minute. What about your favorite show?
So, yes, I was, ha ha ha, that's the joke. There was a big announcement this past weekend, Todd, and I think you should be the one to handle this.
Yes, they have announced who will play the 12th Doctor, a British actor, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. And his name is Peter Capaldi, and I know him from a couple of things. He was actually in an episode of Doctor Who during the Tenet run as a guest actor for it. And he was also in Torchwood, Children of Earth, which is one of the best miniseries that I've ever seen. But I'm happy with it, and I thought it was interesting that they had a simulcast, you know, around the world again to announce it. And it does, and it actually made me happy in a way that I'm like. Like, I remember watching this show as a kid, and we didn't have this kind of stuff with Twitter and no way to know. Like, we didn't know a regeneration was happening, one doctor changing into another, until it happened on PBS. It might have been in the TV guide, and I remember the first time that I saw it, I was like, what regeneration? What's it? Oh, my doctor's gone. What happened? But there's a small part of me that is jealous that the thing that I loved, you know, isn't just mine anymore. That's only a small part. But it does actually warm my heart to see, like, it global and to see, like, people screaming in an audience just because they're announcing. You know, like you were joking around how it's cool to see, like, you know, the Shield and all that. Something from my youth just be like, my God, and like to be, you know, it's from my push just at the comic shop alone. It got that big, but I just think it's really great, and I'm looking forward to see where it goes.
So I have a couple questions. You mentioned that he's been on the show before,
right?
This actor, again, I apologize, Peter Capaldi.
Yes.
So he's been on the show before. How does that play into him being the doctor now? Do we just ignore that he was a person on the show before, or?
Well, he was playing a different character, obviously.
Okay. Or was he?
Yeah, or was he?
Do we now retcon those into continuity that he had been a doctor of something? Or I don't know how these things work.
No, it's just one of those that Britain has 10 actors because it's so small that they have to reuse them. A funny story, because I know you love the history of the classic Doctor Who's. When the 5th Doctor was on, the guy who ended up playing the 6th Doctor, so Peter Davison was the 5th Doctor, and Colin Baker was the 6th Doctor. Colin Baker made a guest, you know, just as an extra, but he played a guy who was another Time Lord who took a pot shot with a gun at the doctor. So years later, he said that was him trying to kill him to get the part and everything. But yeah, so we've had doctors and other characters play multiple parts, be an extra, have a small part, and then come back for a bigger part. And we just, you know, like, yeah, whatever. We look away, you know?
So the other thing that I want to mention is when does this like go into effect? Is this going to affect with that anniversary episode that you were talking about, or?
No, that's November 23rd. That's the 50th anniversary with the 10th Doctor coming back to make an appearance. They say he's going to start with the Christmas episode because they have a Christmas episode every year. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason I like Doctor Who, because they have a holiday episode every year. And you know me and holiday stuff, especially Christmas stuff. But they say he's going to be, his first appearance is going to be in the Christmas episode. I'm going out on a limb and say that's a swerve.
Yeah.
Did I use that right?
You did.
Okay. It's a swerve.
Or a pipe bomb.
Or a pipe bomb that he's going to be in the 50th anniversary episode, and they want to surprise people.
Okay.
That's just me going on a limb.
The reason I ask is, I'm going to make a bold statement.
Mm-hmm.
This is for the good of the show.
Oh, I think I know where you're going.
So, while all this was going on, we were on our way home from Knoebels with the baby. And I had tweeted out my my joke that I think I told on the show before about it should have been Ric Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And changed the show to Dr. Woo. And that's how I was supposed to refer to the show previously. So we were talking about it, and I told April what was going on, new Doctor Who, and so on and so forth. She's like, oh, yeah, I saw something like that. You know, I guess mentioned who knows what she watches. You know, it could be anything. And she had said, you know, I really enjoyed that one episode that we watched, and I wouldn't mind watching it again. So, with the beginning of this new Doctor, I am going to start watching the show.
Okay.
I'm going to keep up with it as best I can.
That shocks me a lot.
Yes. I was going to tease it in advance, but I didn't want to show my hand of what I was going to be doing. So, yeah. I'm going to watch Doctor Who as someone who has absolutely no idea what's going on.
And you know what? Somebody actually tweeted me, shockingly, because I watched Doctor Who. And they actually asked me, they said, do you think a new Doctor is a good time to get on? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, most times, yes, it is.
Right.
Because they want, you know, it's a new Doctor, you know, they have to, that the show's usually wrapping up storylines that go with that character, and sometimes writers change with the, you know, because that's usually the end of contracts and stuff like that. So they wrap it up, and they want to explain things, like the new Doctor might have a new companion, or like they just explain things more in the beginning when there's a new Doctor than later on in the middle of, like, you know, if he's got a 4-year run, the two and a half seasons in, they're not answering a lot of questions about the whole mythos more than they do like when somebody else shows up. If
right.
That makes any sense.
It does. I followed you.
Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, because you never answered back, if you liked my my interpretation of what Ric Flair used to say on the tweet.
No, I did. I didn't get a chance to respond because we were home and we were getting the man situated to wind down.
No, I understand. I just need, you know, constant attention. So
constant,
that's what it comes down to.
Constant gratification? Sure.
Oh, all the time. But I was like, I thought you would appreciate that.
It was good. It gave me a chuckle.
Good. That's all I work for. I work for those likes on Twitter, like you said, because they're worth more than gold or something.
They're worth more than likes on message boards.
Gotcha.
Right. So let's get into some of the digital stuff that's available this week. There is some freebie stuff available, as always, from Marvel, and some actually really good stuff. The first issue of the adjectiveless Spider-Man book from Todd McFarlane from way back in the 80s. That's available for free. Also, the first issue of the newer, grimmer, and grittier X-Force that we saw a couple years back, as well as Invincible Iron Man 521. It was the beginning of the Mandarin storyline that Matt Fraction did, bringing the Mandarin back to the mythos of Tony Stark. And those are all free, available on Comixology, and there are some sales going on Comixology as well. Judge Dredd, the current IDW stuff, is available for sale, as is the entire run of Sweet Tooth, 99 cents a pop. I think that beats getting it single or in trades even.
Yeah, I think the math is there.
Yes, indeed. So yeah, definitely check that out. Sweet Tooth by Jeff Lemire, written and drawn by him. Very, very good book. Definitely check those sales out. Get some freebie digital stuff and, you know, get a couple sales as well.
Yes.
So, also, as we wrap up about the digital stuff, I would be remiss if, you know, obviously Comixology, everything's stored there, whether it be on your little laptop, or, you know, either on your tablet device or however may have you. But if you're looking at companies like your Thrillbent, or you're looking at a lot of the other companies like that, like Image now does the DRM-free stuff where you can download stuff as a PDF file and have it on your hard drive, eventually you're going to run out of space. And the only way to back that stuff up, the best way to back your stuff up, is through our good friends at Transporter. It's a physical device that you have that works just like the cloud, but it's not in some mysterious ether that confuses and scares me. It works peer-to-peer with other transporters, and it's in your control at all times. There's no monthly fees. There's no other worries that you have. You pay for the device. You pay for the hard drive. You load it up. You're good to go for the life of the unit, which I think would be forever. And I always mention it as the amount of data that you can get. You can just start at low-end data, or you can go all the way up to 2 terabytes worth of data, which is at least 1 million high-quality photos. And I mean, like, taking them with, like, a fancy iPhone.
That's a lot of pictures.
That's a lot of pictures.
And you can get that at www.filetransporter.com/longbox. And at checkout, if you put in the code longbox, you get 10% off your order.
Yeah, you forgot the http://// with that.
I always do that.
Now people are going to have no idea how to find that online.
I think they'll manage.
So definitely check them out. It's a really good product, and we're giving you a good deal on those products as well. So let's get into the books that we read from last week. Todd, where would you like to begin?
Let's start on something we both read. How about Indestructible Hulk?
Yes. So Indestructible Hulk number 11. This is the beginning of a new story arc after we wrap things up with Daredevil. They're nice little short story arcs that we're getting here with this over the overarching story. I think the Thor story was like 3 issues. The Daredevil one was 2 issues. Who knows how many this one is going to be. But the crux of this story by Mark Waid, with art by Matteo Scalera, and I know I pronounced that correctly. Essentially, this is the book that's dealing with, you know, one of the books that's dealing with what happened in Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm. All the crazy time crashing and shattering and pulling at the edges.
And I'm not one much for time travel-y stuff or time things being messed up. Mm-hmm. But I think if anyone is going to handle it, at least by this issue, and handle it well, is Mark Waid.
I agree. He has, you know, he's done some really complex stuff and made it, you know, easily accessible. So I have no problem with him doing this because I'm the same way. It's one of those things that time travel or, you know, books that deal with time. If it's not done very carefully, it becomes you become totally lost. And some of the stuff that they were doing in this, that time is changing. I like the way he handled it, the way like Bruce couldn't remember a name. You know, occasionally because the guy's yes. telling him what's going on. And I like some of the aspects of the villain being, you know, from the future. And he missed the mark with his predictions, mm-hmm. but his predictions were dead on. So they eventually came around. Just little stuff like that was perfect for me.
Right, and this was a really good book, not to confuse you with a lot of the time travel stuff, but it kind of deals with, you know, there's one thing that's dealt with in regards to a book that may have been canceled.
Mm-hmm.
Tying a cancellation of a book into the storyline. Not going to give too much away on that, but if you know some books that have been canceled by Marvel recently, I'm sure you could figure it out. And also the explanation why the Hulk is different from time to time. It's because of these fractures in time. And now it is up to the Hulk. Not Banner, but the Hulk. To go and fix them. And I'm very excited to see all the crazy stuff that happens.
Well, Hulk maybe with a partner.
Right. And the way that they do the partner thing is going to be real interesting. I'm very excited to see where this goes next.
I am too, because I saw the cover to next issue.
Yes.
And it mixes a genre that I'm very, you know, that's very close to my heart. But with the Hulk and, you know, some other creatures and stuff. And I'm looking at that going, I want to read that now because that looks like ridiculously interesting.
So yeah. Indestructible Hulk is awesome still, and yes. I'm glad that this is the book, and I'm glad that Mark Waid is the writer that is kind of dealing with some of these time paradox things that are going on because of Age of Ultron. In a different writer's hand, they may not be handled as well, I guess is the best way I could diplomatically say that.
Mark Waid's a scalpel, somebody else might be a sledgehammer.
Yes, yes. So, we talked about one book that we both read. Let's talk about another that we both read, and that's Red Lanterns number 22.
Mm-hmm.
So, the continuation of Charles Soule's run on the book with art by Alessandro Vitti, and it's just more of Guy Gardner with the Red Lanterns. I'm going to let you start this off since this is the one that you were most looking forward to from this past week.
I liked it. It's very interesting to see like them take Guy down this path. Obviously, from last issue, we know that he's infiltrated the Red Lanterns, and he kind of, you know, doesn't have a lot of control, and I think they're taking him down some roads that I find very interesting, but are going to be hard to bring him back from, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
Just, like, it's hard to redeem somebody who's doing very, very bad things. I like the Red Lanterns as characters. They're interesting. They're a little wacky at times, but I think it works. I differ on you. I know the art. I like the art. I know you're not a huge fan of it, but all in all, I'm really enjoying this. To see Guy Gardner cut loose a little is interesting because, you know, we've seen, you know, the pent up guy for years now. I'm really enjoying this. I don't think it's like, you know, like I'm going to equate it to the best books out there. You know, I'm not going to say Saga or anything like that, but I think it's an enjoyable read. And I just like, you know, as we always joke, getting my dose of Guy Gardner, you know? So,
and I'll have to agree with you. You know, I know I'm in the minority in regards to the art. You know, other friends of mine that read this book tell me that I'm crazy, that I'm wrong, et cetera, et cetera. But I still don't like the art. I don't know, maybe if it's the artist himself, maybe it's the inker, whatever it is. Now, I had not read any of the previous Red Lantern stuff beforehand, but the fact that Charles Soule is, I don't know if he's expanding on the pre-existing personalities that these Red Lanterns had before, or he is deciding to do this just so that they're not mindless drones that are just rage, 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 kill, kill, kill. That's what's going to keep me around, the fact that just in this issue alone, he made me care more about these Red Lantern characters than anything, any other appearance of them ever.
Right. I think that whole thing that they do with the blood pool
mm-hmm.
has been done, and that's kind of what, like, before what changes them and stuff like that. Like, they show it in the last issue and a little bit in this issue, and I think that's where we get it. But most of the Red Lanterns that, like, that are out there are the, you know, kill, 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 kind of like what they were talking about in this, a weapon that you just point. But, you know, like I said, I'm with you. I like the characters, the side characters, and they're all new to me because I wasn't reading Red Lanterns, and I'm gonna stay on it. And I love Charles Soule's stuff anyway, so.
Yeah, and like I said, just, you know, based on him being on the book, and the second, you know, this is a bubble book for me. This could have very easily fallen off, just based, like, I could have very easily just said, like, well, I don't like the art, so I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
But this issue is good. I like this issue, I like Guy Gardner, and I'm excited to see what happens next.
Me too.
Yes. So let's talk about, and I'll be as brief as I can in regards to this. I tweeted out the other day in regards to Batman Incorporated number 13. That was the book I was most looking forward to coming out this past week. Written by Grant Morrison, art by Chris Burnham. Somebody else had pointed out, someone much smarter than me, and we'll talk about that, that this is the longest that Grant Morrison has been on a character or story or book ever. Certainly it has bounced around from Batman to Final Crisis to Batman Robin to Batman Incorporated and now to Batman Incorporated New 52. But this is the longest that Grant Morrison has written one character or something in his entire career.
Now, is that most issues, right?
Yes, the most the most consecutive issues. Like, he was, you know, he did his All-Star Superman, that was a year. He did his run on Action Comics, and that was broken up, but he was on it for about a year and a half. If you go back and look, he was only on just, you know, JLA back in the day, only for about 2 years, 2 years and change. Like, it was 2 years, a break, and then, like, one more, you know, one more six-issue arc, and that was it.
I'm with you, because I don't like when people count, like, oh, he's been on this title a long time, and you go by years, and you're like, well, he only did like four issues a year,
right?
You know, so that's not a good mark of it. But like you said, between his Batmans, he did consecutive runs. If there was a gap between them, whatever, it's still technically one giant story, is what you're saying,
right?
Gotcha. Okay.
And that's the thing. Sorry. He got a chance to tell his Batman story that he wanted to tell over the course of, you know, almost 7 years, and I think he did a really good job. You know, I know on the show, I'm definitely, that is not the sentiment of the entire show. Some of the issues may not, like, there was a fill-in issue, I think just an issue or two ago that I didn't dig too much. It was the Batman of Japan that was written by Chris Burnham. But I think what Morrison did with Batman over the course of his run was really interesting in introducing Damian, introducing a lot of different elements that we see, like, in the new Batman cartoon that's on TV. You know, there's characters that Morrison created and introduced in his run that are now in a children's television program.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I know I might be the one on the show who doesn't like Grant Morrison.
Yes.
I get confused on whether it's me who doesn't like him or you. But here's the thing about Grant. I like Grant's ideas, but
yes,
usually when they're used by somebody else.
Gotcha.
So, like, I have no problem. I've said Damian is good. You know, like, I've seen other stuff that he's created, and it's gone on to do stuff. It's just his approach and storytelling I don't like. But I do think he has some decent ideas, just, you know, that they're a little out there for me when he does them.
And I'll also say this. This is a book that can be enjoyed on many different levels, from the very, very smart to me.
That's an interesting scale.
It is a very interesting scale, because I listen to different podcasts and I read different people's articles about the end of this run, and they were talking about the existentialism.
That
Morrison
wrong.
Put in his books, and you know how deep, and you know how all these crazy throwbacks to the 60s stories were all in there if you just look and knew where to look and blah blah blah. And I'm like, I'm just a dumb guy who likes Batman stories that are good.
I'm with you. I get it. Think sometimes people overthink things.
Yes.
With it, and I think there's a middle ground that you kind of have to have. I always joke, like, people, you know, pick apart movies and say what scenes represent, and, you know, I can imagine directors just going, I don't know what he's talking about. That's where those two guys fight, because they had a feud from, you know, scene one. But, I totally understand it. You know, you like it for what it is, for your level of intelligence, you know?
Right.
And that's good for you.
So it's good. Definitely check it out. I'm sure there's going to be a giant omnibus of it. And I am of the mindset, even though I think there's two more Batman Inc. issues, they are not written by Morrison, so I will not be getting them. Just because I don't think I want it sullied by other folks. You know, let this... it's kind of like the Nolan universe Batman. The Nolan universe Batman exists for Nolan to play with. Just like the Morrison Batman exists for Morrison to play with.
Yep. But don't worry, with DC's track record, they won't screw those last two issues up.
I'll never know.
Yeah. Maybe I'll read those last two issues.
Yeah, you do that.
Okay.
Oh, boy. So the last one to talk about is a book that you read that I did not. And that is Adventures of Superman number 3, which collects the digital first books.
Yes. I'm looking at the cover now, written by Matt Kent and drawn by Steven Segovia. I'm hoping I pronounced that right, because our track record
yes.
of pronouncing things right. But this is one of those books that, you know, I didn't know it would be all one story, because the first two had been three chapters, each a different writer and a different artist. But this is I've never read any Matt Kent stuff, but I loved it. And it's one of those things that makes me sad. As much as, you know, I'm not going to bag on the New 52, I like some of the New 52, I don't. It's stories like this that if we're told in the old 52, maybe we wouldn't have needed a New 52, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is a really good story. It's told from Superman, you know, doing a daily adventure. He's going to go off into space, take care of this, do that. And what confused me early on was it was done... The first three quarters of the page on each page is a Superman story. And then there's a little, like, small square, what are they called, a panel, where it's Lois talking with Lex Luthor. And it's interesting because they don't match up anywhere. And then the way he brings them together at the end of the book is seamless and really works. And it's just like, we always joke that it's so hard to write Superman that people don't get it. And I'm holding in my hand a copy where I think somebody does it perfectly. And we have this new Superman that I'm not a big fan of in certain aspects, that this is one of the guys that should be doing Superman Monthly and totally gets it.
Well, I do have hope for Greg Pak taking over the Action Comics come this November, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And I had actually stopped getting the print versions because, you know, obviously with this being available digitally, you can kind of see who some of the writers coming down the pike are.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm going to be getting this. I might end up getting this one by, like, a writer-by-writer basis.
Mm-hmm. See, like, the way I do it, if I could do it, too, is, like, but I pick up my books that day. So mm-hmm. I would just be like, oh, I could go off and on. And I think that's what I might do now. But it's fun to have a Superman story. I love the red trunks, you know, all that old stuff that I'm becoming sappy when I went in my old age. Mm-hmm. I just like to see it. And it's kind of cool to see. And I like the Lex more as the not, you know, the wacky scientist guy, but the evil businessman. There's just that's always going to be my favorite Lex, and he seems to show up in this more than the other wacky, you know, robot wearing Lexes.
Gotcha. So maybe I might pick this one up. I know the next couple issues may be writers I'm either not familiar with or not too keen on, but mm-hmm. yeah, I'll definitely check this one out on your recommendation. It's not a five Wednesday month, but there are some light weeks that I have coming up, so.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that covers everything for this past week. Todd, what are you most looking forward to coming out this week?
You know what? I'm going to go with another Charles Soule book.
Ooh.
And I'm going to go with Swamp Thing, the last issue of the crossover. Well, it's not a crossover, but the appearance of John Constantine and the Whiskey Tree and everything that's going on there. I've been loving this storyline for the last two issues and everything that Charles Soule has done. So I'm right now on a big Charles Soule kick, I guess.
Yeah, and I know you are not one much for doing advance orders, but he does have that new book coming out from Oni in October. So I will remind you. Coming out, unless there's something super crazy huge coming out that same day in October, the week that comes out, I'll probably be saying that'll be my pick for the week, just as a reminder to you.
Isn't that like letter 44 or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is.
Yes. I'm definitely going to be all over that too.
So, sorry.
I'm just going to say I'm a soul man. If you, we need one bad pun to show. That's my goal.
Again, we have to name the episode somehow.
Yes, we do, and make sure it gets, you know, on the mantle. But anyway, go ahead.
I'll have to make sure that the poor grammar that's used in these to get the joke across are continued in the actual title when it's published.
Gotcha.
I'll explain where the joke is, because those are always the funniest jokes, the ones that you have to explain.
Oh, that's my bread and butter of humor.
So, unfortunately, we do not cross over. I am looking forward to Swamp Thing. Charles Soule has been great on the book. I've been recommending this to so many people. And, unfortunately, that is not the book I'm most looking forward to. The book I am most looking forward to coming out this week is Trillium Number 1 by Jeff Lemire. We had mentioned his Sweet Tooth stuff. His previous Vertigo book is on sale for Comixology. It's as though DC is planning these things. Last week's big sale was Flashpoint with the release of the Flashpoint direct-to-DVD cartoon. And hey, given Trillium the big push, given a Vertigo book the big push by having the sale to go along with it with Comixology, I'm all for it. I like Jeff Lemire. He's doing the art, and he is doing the writing on this, and he's doing something different. It's a different way of telling the story. It is a space love story told from two different perspectives, where it's two stories being told that converge in the middle of the book.
Mm-hmm.
And all eight issues, I think, are going to be that way. And it's going to be very unique to see how that reads. And I'm excited for new ways to tell stories with comic books.
Is it on your pull list?
It most certainly is on my pull list.
Yay, because I was actually talking to Dave about this one, and he said that's one of those that just people started adding, you know, like crazy, because I think the Vertigo, like, bug is catching again.
Well, I'll say that I learned my lesson in March, because the way that it would do, the way that I used to do my list is I would hand my list in at the end of the month, and what would be on the list would be whatever books were going to be shipping that month. So at the end of March, you know, or at the end of February, I would hand in something that would be shipping for March. Now, if it was a, you know, a smaller book like this or an independent book that just happened to be shipping the first week of the month, because it wasn't in my original orders, it may not have been ordered enough. Mm-hmm. So now when I give my orders, I have books, you know, when I handed in my list last week for the new month for what's August, I had books that I know are coming out in November on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Just in case.
You know what? That does help.
It does.
Because, you know, people who, you know, and, I, you know, I'd never talk bad about Dave, is one of those that if he's getting books and he orders so many and people have it during the first, like, the first order when the previews comes out, like, they get first dibs. And then as you go, it, people who add it later and later, you know, as he's running out, that they're the ones that were most likely not to get them. And I think that's the way to do it.
Right. So, yeah, my list has books that are coming out over the next 3 months, let alone what I have coming out this month. When September's list comes out, there's going to be the adjunct list of all the villains' books. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, somebody needs to do a documentary on my insane obsessive compulsive behavior with my comics list.
I think we can get somebody to do that.
Somebody who wants to make the worst documentary ever.
By worst, you mean best.
No, I wouldn't even want to watch that.
Ah. Okay.
So I think that covers what we're looking forward to coming out this week. There is tons and tons of stuff coming out this week and all throughout the month. And you can find out about all the news and all the information by following the show on Twitter at Weekly Long Box. For more Doctor Who than is legally allowed, you can follow Todd on Twitter at Roker the Joker. That's R-O-W-K-E-R, the Joker. And if you like cryptic remarks about podcasts and wrestling, boy howdy, do I have the person for you to follow, and that would be me. That is at L.F. Chikarason. That's L-F-C-H-I-K-A-R-A-S-O-N. You can also shoot us an email at that same lfchikarason@ymail.com if you're not Twitterly inclined and want to be part of the show. And the way that you can be part of the show is by contributing to our weekly Twitter question.
Seamless, that segue.
Yes. After 90 episodes, it's as though it's almost beaten into my brain.
Gotcha.
So this was Todd's choice from last week, and it was the most underrated run of a book. So in my mind, this was the sort of book that, like, is really good, deserves more praise, and or is not collected.
Mm-hmm.
That was what I looked at a lot. We had a lot of recommendations here. I was surprised to see Judd Winnick's name come up as much. You know, my rivalry with him that he doesn't know about. Eric Haggard mentioned his run on Green Lantern. Royce McWee. Hopefully your books arrive in a timely fashion, chose his Exiles run. Now, I heard good things about the Exiles run, not so much about the Green Lantern run.
I read both of them. The mm-hmm. Exiles run was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
The Green Lantern run I liked to a point, and then I think it goes off the rails.
We had people specifically mention Rom the Space Knight, and I think it's underrated and uncollected because of licensing issues. Noel Margate and Kevin Hellions, both longtime listeners of the show, mentioned that. You know, Craig Pearson, a longtime listener of the show, and his Twitter handle doesn't make a lick of sense to me. It's a bunch of letters, it looks like. I get very confused by his Twitter handle. But he had mentioned Chew. And I think Chew, like, gets the due that it deserves, if that makes any sense.
You think it's right in the wheelhouse of the acclaim, right?
Yeah, I definitely think, like, it should sell better, but I think it's a very well-respected book.
Gotcha.
A lot of the other choices that came up from our listeners are stuff that I would have chosen. Zeus Ramos mentioned the original Resurrection Man by Abnett and Lanning. Our good buddy DJ mentioned the John Rogers, Keith Giffen, Blue Beetle during the Infinite Crisis run.
That one I read and liked a lot.
John Seiler mentioned Paul Cornell's Captain Britain in the MI-13. That's a great underrated run.
Definitely.
And this was one that's just been going through my hands lately as I've been going through a friend of mine's collection that's been being shipped out. The Alan Grant, Norm Breyfogle run on Detective Comics. It's weird. It's like, it's not high, it's not in high demand. None of it's collected, but it's really good, and you never hear anyone talking about it. Like, I love Norm Breyfogle's Batmans. Like, his Batman is awesome.
Mm-hmm. I didn't get to read much of that Batman, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's really good. So all of those could have been choices on my list. And, our good buddy Josh also mentioned Thunderbolts as well. But I don't know if Thunderbolts counts, only because, like, I think Thunderbolts is a book that's still going on today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was always a good run, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I never really read Thunderbolts, so I'll have to take your word for it.
Oh, my goodness. You should definitely read that first arc, you know?
The Baron Zemo?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Spoilers on a book that's, you know, 20-some years old.
Yeah, well, you know, they got it. They covered the without having it spoiled the first time it was out. I'm ruining it now.
Oh, boy. So what was your choice? What was your pick for the underrated book?
Mine is one that I always go to because they reprint the three-part miniseries that goes into it, but they never really reprinted any of it afterwards. But I think they're getting around to it now, which kind of might be put this on my board, is Mike Grell's ongoing Green Arrow run.
Oh, yeah.
It was one of those that was out during the mature readers that eventually turned into Vertigo with other books like, you know, Swamp Thing and Sandman and stuff like that. But I thought it was groundbreaking in, at the time, you know, late 80s. It was a book about him. He decided to get away from the trick arrows and just use regular arrows, and he patrolled the streets. And he didn't really patrol. He just, whenever he'd see a crime or something, he'd go out and do look into it. And he was like 39 going on 40, and every year of the book he got a year older. And it was just interesting things that I had never seen at that time. And, like, you know, a lot of the other books at that time, Dark Knight and Watchmen, were a few years earlier, and other stuff was coming out and getting the acclaim. I always thought that that hit me at the right age and just always flew under the radar and just thought was really, really good.
Huh, that's an interesting one. That's one that didn't even cross my mind. That's, I think it's, I wouldn't say that it's, underrated or underappreciated, but I would say that it's definitely one I take for granted.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just like, oh yeah, that's a great Green Arrow story. But then when you look at the number of Green Arrow stories that aren't good,
yeah,
it definitely shines a light on the. It should shine a light on the ones that are good, like that Mike Grell run. And yes, you are correct. They are putting the first couple issues of that out in trade here shortly. I know they solicited for October, but sometimes. Those, you know, when DC does their trades, it's like, oh, it's in the October previews, but then it's like 2 months after that.
Right. And I mean, like, the Longbow Hunters mini gets the acclaim.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of where I go with it, but the ongoing doesn't, that it deserves. So, what's yours then? I'm actually kind of curious. Is it Secret Six?
No, it is not Secret Six, because again, I think Secret Six is a, you know, a book that was, you know, it like Chew, it gets the acclaim that it deserves.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas a book that not many people talk about, it's a great creative team with an interesting take, and it actually was just recently, within the last maybe 2 or 3 months, collected in a giant hardcover by Marvel, and that is the Kurt Busiek Untold Tales of Spider-Man.
That's a great run.
Yes.
That's a Spider-Man run that I read, and I'm not the Spider-Man fan that you are, but go ahead.
Right. And again, it's art by Pat Oliff. It fits the style of the time, which was when it came out, which was the mid to late 90s, but it also would fit just as seamlessly into the stories that it supposedly fits seamlessly into. It went 25 issues, and they did 2 annuals or 3 annuals, I think, because there was one where they did an annual in the Untold Tales that crossed over into the Amazing Spider-Man that was going on at that time, like 96 or 97. You know, by the same creative team with, like, the villains. Like, it was his first appearance in the annual in Untold Tales and his final return in Amazing Spider-Man that same month, I think it was. But yeah, it fits into the gaps of issues of Amazing Spider-Man, where things were mentioned but never seen. Like, this fills in those gaps, and you don't have to have a really good knowledge of those first 50 or 60 issues of Amazing Spider-Man from back in the 60s, because Kurt Busiek is such a good writer, he does a very good job of giving you that information without, like, piling it on, if that makes any sense.
Totally understand. Dave talks about that all the time. He's a huge Spider-Man fan, as you know. And I would be reading it, and he'd be like, oh, like, this is a Vulture story.
Yeah.
And, like, there was a great Vulture story where Vulture kind of goes, I'm going to go off on my own and think about things, maybe. And Dave's like, oh, well, that's this issue where he appeared here. And then he didn't appear again for, like, 20 or 30 issues. It might even be longer. And he's like, and he seamlessly makes it, like, why Vulture doesn't show up for a while. And that was really cool. And my favorite part is I think the annual had Aunt May's wheat cakes recipe.
Yes.
And that's, I mean, that should be reprinted always.
Right, it was a fun run on a book during that 90s time where Marvel was taking some chances, doing some different things with some different books, you know, because they were not doing the best, and they're like, let's just try a whole bunch of different things, and some stuff I think worked, and that is, you know, it was 99 cents at the time. I don't even know if you could find the issues, but if you can, I say definitely find them, because they're great.
Yep. Of Kurt Busiek's best stuff.
Yes, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
So I hear you have a Twitter question for us this week?
I do. My Twitter question from last week, and again, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, getting to crossover stuff, so I have to carefully word some of these. What is your favorite TV adaptation of a comic book?
Okay.
Not movie adaptation, your favorite TV live-action adaptation. I know we did movie before, I know we did cartoon before, we never did live-action TV before.
Interesting.
Yes.
Keep narrowing that field down.
That's right.
What was your favorite live-action TV show debuted on a Thursday?
Who is your favorite despot ruler of a foreign land who wears green?
That would be Count Vertigo for me.
There's two.
Yep. Gonna go with Count Vertigo. But anyway.
So, yeah. So, just tweet that at us, whether you include myself, whether you include Todd, whether you include the show at Weekly Long Box, or nothing at all. As long as you include the hashtag GrizzWLQ, I can track them all down, compile them up, and we could talk about them right here next week. And we also may be having a special guest on the show next week. We're trying to do something new, get some guests, maybe change the format up a little bit. And if the guest situation goes off this week or next, and it's met with favorable reviews, maybe it's something we'll do more often in the future.
Yes. I love talking to famous people.
That's right. And this is this will be a famous person with a, you know, someone who is near and dear to my heart. With their loves of, you know, comics and other things. And we'll get into all that if he is on the show next week. If not, I'm sure it'll be in 2 weeks, and if he is not, I'm sure we'll talk about his project at length if we cannot coordinate our schedules, because both Todd and I are very busy men who are constantly on the go.
Yes. My wheels are constantly turning.
Yes.
So.
So, I guess, is there anything else that we're going to talk about before we wrap things up?
Wolverine?
Oh, yes! This is the part of the show that if you do not want to be spoiled by the Wolverine, you can tune out now. You know, we do thank you for listening to episode 90 of Weekly Long Box. For Todd, this is Leonard. We'll catch you all next week. And if you want to hang out for some The Wolverine talk, we will get into that shortly. I'll give you a couple seconds, and Todd, we can get right into it.
Has that been long enough?
I think that's long enough.
Okay. Went to see The Wolverine with a couple of friends the other night. I really enjoyed it. I liked it a lot. I wouldn't say it's like amazing, best, you know, comic book movie, you know, ever. But I've so far I've liked it more than I did Iron Man 3 or Man of Steel. It was, I could see, like, if people didn't like it, it's more action adventure. It's almost like a more of a James Bond action type movie than like an X-Men film. It's basically him being brought to Japan to meet someone he saved during World War II during the bombing of Nagasaki, and he tells him that he's dying and he could take Wolverine's healing factor away that's been keeping him alive all these years. You know, because it's been a curse for him. Everybody's loved is gone and stuff like that. And he says he can transfer it to him because he wants to live. He's, even though he's lived 60 years or whatever it is from Nagasaki, he says he can do more. He's a rich guy and everything. And then some stuff happens. Wolverine says no, and the guy dies, and somebody's going after his daughter, who is Mariko, who's the classic, you know, character that Wolverine had a relationship with. And it goes into there. It's him protecting her from the Yakuza and the Black Clan, because they couldn't use the Black Hand, apparently, because they sold Daredevil back to Marvel. But after that, you know, it's him and then the Viper's in it, and she does something to his powers and makes him more vulnerable. She says it suppresses his healing factor. So he takes a beating, which is actually kind of cool to see, because you see him coming back, like, from gunshots and stuff, but he's not the Wolverine, the tank that he was. And it's an interesting movie with that. And then around the last 20 minutes, it turns into more of a big superhero dust up with the Silver Samurai, which is actually a suit of armor, but a really fun movie.
You're right, because a lot of the people that I saw talking about this, I think, you know, it came out 2 weeks ago, so you know, we're free to talk about it, and I don't see myself getting a chance to see it anytime soon. Mm-hmm. That people were divided. Either they loved the movie and then hated the last 20 minutes, or didn't like the movie and loved the last 20 minutes.
I liked both. I liked the first part better and the last 20 minutes less, though they did make some bold choices in the last 20 minutes.
Okay, like what?
They cut off his claws, his adamantium claws. Yeah, because the guy, it turns out that the guy who's the Silver Samurai is the guy from Nagasaki who faked his death. And he fakes his death and he lures him into this thing, and he needs to, they don't say it, but the way they do it, he needs to burrow into his bones. Mm-hmm. To get out whatever he needs. So they cut off his claws, and then he drills into the bones that are inside the claws, because he had the three claws, and he tries to take out the power. I don't know how to explain it. So he's getting younger, Wolverine's getting older, some stuff goes down, and it stops, obviously. But to do that, he had to cut off both sets of adamantium claws at the knuckles. So Wolverine no longer has adamantium claws. He just has the bone claws now. And I thought, I was watching, I'm like, how are they going to get those claws back on? Like, you know, because the armor was made out of adamantium that the Silver Samurai wore, and he had the big sword that could cut through anything. And I'm like, well, if the suit's made out of adamantium, they can work with it. Maybe they can figure out a way. But no, by the end of the movie, he doesn't have them back. And I thought that was really an interesting choice, because we know him as Wolverine with the adamantium claws.
So he just has the bone claws in the movie universe now.
Yes.
That's crazy.
It is. It actually is. And I was kind of like, wow, I liked it. And then the reason I know is because it jumps to 2 years later during the end credit scene, which gave me goosebumps.
Oh, yeah?
Basically, the end credit scene is him trying to get on a plane somewhere. I forget where. It doesn't really matter. And as he's going through the metal detector, he's getting ready to go through the metal detector. He's like, I'll take the pat down. You know, because he still has the adamantium in his like bones everywhere, but the claws. And then he sees like metal shaking and the coins jumping up and down, and he realizes Magneto is in the room, and he turns around and he goes to stab him with the claws, and he's warning him about something's coming and this and that. And the cool thing is, in the background, you start to see people slowing down, because there's like a security guard running towards him.
Okay.
And you slowly realize, if you remember from the X-Men movies where Xavier would freeze everybody, that he was doing that. And I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it now. And he's like, well, if you don't believe me, kind of a deal, maybe you'll believe him. And you turn around and there's Charles in the wheelchair. And he's like, professor, and he's like, there's something dark coming, and it's obviously the X-Men Days of Future Past movie. And I'm like, this, it was fun. I highly recommend it. You said you probably won't get out to see it, but if you get a chance someday on FX or DVD, I think especially with the lackluster comic movies this year,
yeah,
I think you'll really enjoy it. It's now, a breath of fresh air because of it.
The question I have is it, you know, is it Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart?
Yes, I got you. I'm sorry I didn't mention that. Yes, it's...
Because now we have two.
Right, because it's them in our time, making look like, you know, we're going to end up having to go back to, you know, whatever the Days of Future Past X-Men is. And the thing that I like about it tonight made me think maybe that's the reason they cut the claws off them, is because if they're going to be fighting Sentinels, he becomes, like, unstoppable.
That's true. That's
where
a good
he can
point.
Cut through anything, like any sentinel, anytime with the bones, at least it gives, you know, makes it he can't take it down 1, 2, 3. And another reason is that the old Wolverine doesn't have, like, if he shows up in the movie, which, you know, he probably, maybe he will if we run into him, he'll have the claws too, and we don't have to explain a whole, hey, look, I have metal claws that you won't get for 10 years.
Right.
If they have the old, young Logan in it, I don't know, but. So. But so, there's interesting scenes. The bullet train scene is awesome. As goofy as you think it could be, they do it really well. And it adheres to, like, the Wolverine Claremont Miller story.
Okay.
Which there's a lot of imagery that I remember, but it's been a long time since I've read the story. So I don't know. Like, I remember there was a bear in the beginning of the movie that he fought. And I don't remember if it's for the same reasons in the movie as it is in the comic. Stuff like that. There's the bullet train scene. There's a scene where Wolverine's fighting a bunch of the Black Klan, as he's trying to go save Markiro. And as soon as you see it, you're like, that's a Frank Miller scene. It's ridiculously awesome. You know what I mean? Like seeing the ninjas just coming over the Japanese rooftops and stuff in the snow. You're like,
right.
Yeah, you just nailed it. And like I said, it makes me want to read that, Wolverine mini again, which I think is cool.
That's pretty cool.
To see what they took and what they didn't, you know?
Yes.
So, highly recommend it if anybody who hasn't seen it. But though, if you're listening now, well, there's the movie for you. And one last thing. One of the things I like about it is he never puts on the suit at all, like the X-Men suits or anything.
Yeah.
And he's one of the characters that constantly could get away with it for me, because I always remember some of the coolest stories were always Wolverine in the jacket with the fur collar.
Right.
Just walking around and, you know, with jeans and the button down flannel shirt, just finding trouble. And you don't realize it as you're watching it, that at no point is it very superhero-y until the end. And I thought that was really cool with a Wolverine character of all, you know, like it could have been big and bad and over the top, but they dialed it back.
Huh. That's pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think I've babbled way too much.
No, listen, you're selling me on the movie. You know, like, I was kind of lukewarm on it, like, I can come or go with it, but, you know, I don't see myself seeing it in the theaters, but I will most certainly check that out when the time comes available, you know, on FX or DVD or on demand or however you watch movies these days.
Many ways you can, I hear.
Right. So, yeah, I think that is a giant show for this week.
Yes, super extendo show.
So, is there any movies coming out this weekend that we can look forward to a review of?
If I get a chance. I mean, it's not a comic book movie, but Elysium is this weekend.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, and I was a big fan of District 9.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of them that I'm really looking forward to, because I think he's a possibility of, like, our great director. And this is a second sci-fi movie. I'd like to see him move on to some other stuff. But this looks just amazing from every scene that I've seen. So hopefully sometime this weekend I'll hit it. Have it for the show next week, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I'll be, that's another one that I definitely wanted to check out, but I don't see myself getting a chance to.
It's because you have people who love you and a family.
Right. It's difficult to bring the baby to a movie like that.
Right. Well, I'm a hi-fi and wheeling and dealing or whatever it is.
All right. You are the Ric Flair Doctor Who combination that we can only dream about.
Yes. I'm the male offspring of a pistol, I think.
And I think that's a great place to end the show. I do thank everyone for listening to the extended version of the episode 90 here of Weekly Longbox. For Todd, this is Leonard, and we will catch you all here next week.